we're so happy to have as our guest on the Mitch Hanks Show, Jason Machete, who by day is a financial planner and family man, but overcame a lot of odds in terms of sheer survival and being on this planet. We're happy Jason has joined us, with diagnosed with leukemia, which is bad enough, but a rare strain of leukemia, and things did not look good. In fact, I think was a slim chance of living beyond 5 years at the age of 40, which with two boys who were growing up at the time and a wife, it must not have felt very good. Jason, thanks for coming on the show.
Hey, Mitch, thanks for having me. Always a pleasure visiting with you. And yeah, it wasn't exactly a very pleasant time in my life.
No, in fact, it had to be scary, frightening as all get out. I would probably like being in Hawaii over the recent days with that false alarm. But I'm telling you right now, what was going through your mind? How do you deal with something that dire? And what did you have to go through to change your fortune?
Well, first of all, you start, I'm guessing any patient, any person with a near-terminal illness first starts with the question, why me? And like everyone else, I would assume everyone else does that. I went through that, but only for a short time. And I tried to reflect back on what had occurred in my life and didn't spend much time answering why me, because of course me, because you can handle it. And that's what I began. You know, you can't reverse what happens to you from what I've learned. And so I have this diagnosis. Okay, what are we going to do next? What are the steps? I used my education and my faith to combine those two and find my own cure, if you will.
Are you, what religion are you?
Catholic.
You were leaning heavily, you were going to Mass a lot or talking to a priest?
I didn't go a lot. I went on Sundays, but I went to a Jesuit college where faith formation was important along with study. And I learned how to research. I went to the University of Scranton in the Pocono Mountains, Pennsylvania. And I learned there how to research and how to produce results in an area that you wanted results. So I used my education to try to solve my own puzzle. Now, certainly the physicians are wonderful, but physicians have hundreds of cases. And so it's very hard for them to internalize my case.
You had one case.
I have one case.
So tell me about what you had to do to find the procedures you needed.
So, originally I was diagnosed in March of 98. I had this kind of a horrible diagnosis. It's hairy cell leukemia is very rare, and I had a variant of the disease, which I didn't really know at first. But I quickly realized that I needed to do my own work. So I stayed up late at night saying to myself, there's got to be a way. Now, this was 98, internet around for, you know, a few years. I don't recall Google being there. So I used Yahoo search, typed in hairy cell leukemia, and then for hours on end, nights on end, and maybe weeks, I don't recall, I would search the pages trying to find someone or thing that could help me.
Weeks of this, possibly. Weeks.
I think so. I know it was at least a week of every single night till 2, 3, or 4 in the morning.
Yeah.
And then one night, like just out of nowhere, after I'd clicked on what seemed every possible link, I found a doctor in San Diego and later found a clinical trial in Washington, both kind of matching. So when you're looking for treatments, you're looking for bad stuff. Like I have these three bad counts, white cell, hemoglobin, neutrophils, and if you have low enough counts, then you can qualify for trials. That's kind of how it works. So I was like, yay, I have all these bad counts. I might be able to get in this drug trial.
So bad is good.
Bad is good in this case, in your research. You're looking for something that you fit.
And you call them on the phone, they said, come on out, or how'd that work?
Well, there's an interesting story about that. A very good friend, Dr. Bob Poser, who has since passed away, Dr. Bob was a Major League Baseball player for the 32 White Sox and the 35 Browns. We became friends over at Warner Park. Later, he went on to be a physician for 50 years. He called me one day and asked me how I was doing. He wanted to do something with me, and I said, I can't go because I'm anemic and I feel really crappy. And he said, well, what are you going to do about it? And I said, well, I'm writing a letter to NIH, you know, very authoritarian. And he goes, no, you're not. You're going to call NIH. And I said, okay, well, why?
He said, the National Institute of Health.
Yes, in Bethesda. So I took that advice. I didn't write a letter. I called, and after, you know, countless phone calls, I found the right protocol nurse to speak with. And she says, well, guess what? I said, what? She said, you qualify for this trial. That's the good news. And I said, okay, it sounds like there's some bad news. And she said, yeah, it's full. And I said, okay, well, what does a guy do to, you know, get on the wait list? And she said, well, I'll put you on it. A few days went by, and I got a phone call. I was driving home from Milwaukee. I had a cell phone then, but I pulled over because we were safer back then. And she said, are you sitting down? I said, well, yeah, I was driving on the interstate, and I pulled over. She's like, well, you're in the trial. And I said, you know, you're kidding. I started crying, and, you know, I couldn't believe it. So, like, a couple days later, I was out in Washington in this clinical trial. And I went through all these forms. You know, we're sitting in a big office with lots of doctors and nurses. And I said, they said, do you have any questions, Mr. Massetti? Not many people say my name right the first few times, or the way we say it. And I said, actually, I have one question, and that's it. Well, what's that? And I said, well, how did I get in the trial? Like, I wasn't in.
Yeah.
And how does it change in, like, a couple days? And the doctor looked over at the protocol nurse, and he said, can we tell him? And she said, yeah, I think so. And he said, well, the guy in front of you wanted to watch the World Cup, and he lived in Italy, and he wasn't willing to travel during the World Cup. And I said, you're kidding me. And he said, no, we're not.
Be grateful it wasn't this year, because they're not in this year.
No. So that's all true, and it was all, like, I was pretty euphoric about that news. I felt bad for the guy that opted out.
Yeah, boy.
But I opted in, and 20 years later, I'm still here.
Imagine. Still here? You look 30 years younger than you are, by the way. This man is the Benjamin Button of, as we know each other, the Italian Workman's Club. No, you're in great shape. You look very healthy.
Well, thank you. I feel well. You know, a lot of my care, Dr. Walter Longo took care of me here in Madison. I kind of skipped the part where I went out to San Diego for a second opinion.
I was going to ask about San Diego because you said there Washington and San Diego were similar.
Yeah. So, well, Dr. Savin, who was kind of the pioneer of the first drug that I took that failed, actually. I was told by my original physician, oncologist, hey, don't worry about this. Yeah, it's cancer, but the drug we use has a 98%, he may have said even cure rate or remission rate. And I'm like, okay, well, let's get it going. Well, I ended up in that 2%, and after that, I was frustrated at...
Where it didn't work.
I ended up in the 2% that didn't work. I was pretty frustrated that, you know, I would have just... I know that's exciting to tell a patient that, but I probably would have just held off and said, you should be okay or something like that. Anyway, I wasn't okay, and I went to see Dr. Savin with my wife, Julie, and Alan said, well, first of all, he said, you'll probably die of syphilis at 105 before you die from hairy cell leukemia. My wife didn't think that was that funny.
Boy, they're setting the bar low here in terms of danger at that point.
Yeah. I was pretty happy to hear that news, actually, right? And,
well, sure.
And then he said, okay, well, we've got to get your spleen out. He said, your spleen's like the size of a football. And I said, you know, why is that? And he's like, well, it collects cells like an oil filter in your car. It collects the bad cells, and it just keeps getting bigger and bigger and bigger. We got to get it out. And it'll buy you some time. It'll buy you a year, year and a half of better life. Because basically, when you take the spleen out and it's full of bad cells, now all those cancer cells, it sounds horrible, but all those cancer cells can kind of go through your whole peripheral blood system instead of collecting and swelling and causing you all kinds of pain. And so that's really what happened. And it actually did. It's just a temporary fix. It's kind of like putting a piece of tape on your air filter in your car to hold the lid down.
So, though, something went awry in terms of San Diego. The drug didn't work, so that bought you time, the removal of the spleen. But something made you go to Washington, D.C. instead of staying in San Diego? Or what happened there?
Well, Dr. Savin, it was hard to get treated through him in San Diego. So treatments with, you know, blood cancer, if the doctor's going to treat you, you have to do the treatment there. So I did treatment here. And he collaborated with Dr. Longo here. And the NIH was kind of a supplementary thing. I just wanted to explore all my options, every option that I could.
You found the better trial.
Yeah. So they all worked together. Dr. Savin and Dr. Kreitman and Dr. Longo all worked together. I even saw Martin Tallman at Northwestern. Because why, if you have a life-threatening disease, why not check into everything that you can so that you're still ticking?
Yes.
And here I am. I'm pretty much...
And they're working together, which is they pointed you to the best place, obviously. Mm-hmm. Now, let me ask you, I mean, at that point, and after you've succeeded and you're surviving 20 years later, I mean, doesn't that just make every other problem that you face day to day seem pretty darn small?
Absolutely. It absolutely positively does. And I've been spending a lot of my time the last few years trying to help other people with their particular blood cancer problems through the Leukemia and Lymphoma Society, and just in my work. You know, I work for a not-for-profit financial company, and just helping people that don't have it as good as I do feels very good, regardless of what you make for a living or anything else related to that. Just helping people feels good, and I clearly was helped by so many people, and I'm seriously living today because of that. And, you know, doctors don't always get credit for saving someone's life, but mine did.
And they did help you, but you worked around the clock to find the help.
Well, this is true. If anyone listening to this has a debilitating disease or a debilitating problem, they need to first be their own advocate. They need to just say, look, I can fix this. And you can. You can fix a lot of things.
Well, so many people just listen to the doctor. Not that the doctor is bad, but they simply submit to the system.
Right. I refuse to do that.
You wouldn't do that.
No, I refuse to do that. I want to understand when I'm told, well, that count is that's not something we're really looking at. I'm like, well, why not? Why aren't we looking at that one? I like that one. I don't like the trend in that one. You know, the trend is your friend, and I don't like that trend. Well, then they'd have to give me more information because I want to know.
Well, sure.
I'm not like a big pain in the butt patient, but if there's asterisks next to my counts, let's get rid of the asterisk.
Yeah.
I mean, if it doesn't matter, then why is there an asterisk?
Well, and that worked for you, and thank God. But so now what's the protocol now?
Well, the protocol now is to stay healthy mentally and physically, is to not worry about blood cancer, but again, try to help other people. I got lymphoma after the leukemia because I had so much chemotherapy that it destroyed my immune system. And I woke up one morning, instead of having leukemia, I had lymphoma, which is essentially a cousin of leukemia, but they're totally different cells and they're different diseases. And again, I was like, crap. And that prognosis, I was told, we're hopeful. Well, okay. That doesn't sound too good to me. So I fought through that with a much better success rate than the leukemia. So leukemia is still present, but it's not present that we have to really think about it.
How often do you have to go in to be checked?
Once a year.
Once a year.
Yeah.
And you've made it through 20 years, so.
Yeah, things are going great. I believe it or not, I'm still in a clinical trial at Bethesda because they haven't said this, but they're so amazed that I'm still living. They want to try to put together essentially the puzzle pieces to go, okay, well, how did he do it?
How did this work? Have they told you how rare your success is?
They haven't specifically told me, but I've seen it because, sadly, the two people that entered my specific trial have both gone on to God. And so I'm the only guy left from the three. And so I think my odds were not great.
Well, we're happy you're here. And I think you're inspiring people who have bad news of that sort to not give up, keep fighting, never take no for an answer, and keep searching for help.
Oh, Mitch, the worst thing you can do is quit in something that you want to do. It's absolutely, positively the worst thing you could ever. You want to be a better golfer? Well, gosh darn it, go and play golf and read about golf and practice golf and talk to people about golf. You'd probably be a better golfer. It's not that complicated. But I also advocate writing down your plan. I had a very specific plan and who I wanted to see and when I wanted to see them and how I wanted to see them and what was going to happen as a result. And it happened. It's, in many cases, it's probably better than I even thought the plan would come out, which is always great.
Well, and how often is that the case where people, I want to be this or I want to do that or I want to do that, but they never write it down. There's no plan.
Right.
For most people. And, you know, 3,000 chocolates later, maybe they're 80 pounds overweight.
Exactly. My dad always taught me to plan my work and work my plan. And again, it's not that complicated. It could be very simple. But just what do you want to accomplish? When do you want to accomplish it? By? And how are you going to do it? What are the steps? And then just do the steps. And I don't know. It sounds so simple. It is simple. But a lot of people skip it. I asked a guy recently, I stand around a campfire. I said, hey, how do you do your planning? And he pointed up here to his temple.
His noggin.
And I said, oh, good. You know, you're pretty successful. You might be more successful.
You plan your downtime?
Absolutely. Weekend optimizer.
So, in other words, from an hour on the weekend, I have to find a way to have fun.
Well, I don't think you have to be, like, super anal about it. But I think if you think to yourself, what do I like to do on the weekend that's not work? And then you jot those things down. Then you can optimize your weekend by saying, okay, I wanted to ice fish. I wanted to go to the shoe cobbler and get my shoes fixed because I always forget they've been in my car for 6 weeks. Mm-hmm. Right? If you write that down, there's a higher likelihood the shoes are going to get dropped off.
But those skills you received from your father and also learning how to research in college helped you in your quest.
Yes.
To find an answer to your survival, which is an amazing story.
Thank you.
I'm inspired. I'm going to go do 20 push-ups after talking to you and go have some Brussels sprouts. Jason Machete, quite a story and inspiring to us all, facing tough odds with leukemia, lymphoma, a very unique strain of leukemia, and overcame insurmountable odds to survive. And thank you so much for coming in and telling the story.
Thank you for having me, Mitch. Always enjoyed visiting with you.
Thank you very much, and thank you for listening to this version of The Mitch Hanks Show.